Okay. There you are. Now I have. So I'm going to go fast. You'll have to listen fast. Or like Tim say, fast. Listen fast, man. But you can't say fast, man. That doesn't work. So I'll go fast. You'll have to listen. And if you can't keep up, please don't try and take notes. It's not going to work. You'll probably get the headings of the sections, but there's a lot of information here, more than 200 slides. Most of what I say will be up there. So you'll be able to read, but you won't be able to take notes. Okay? My mistake, I didn't figure in music worship to the Lord. So Tim, he's the magician. He'll work out something there. A number of years ago, Tim used to have what was called the Worldview Conference. Was that right, Tim? Was that before Resolved? What do you call it? Resolution or Resolved? Resolution. That was before Resolution, the Worldview Conferences. The intention of those conferences was to build into believers a way of thinking that helped them to be practical Christians. So over the next 2 days, with reduced time, we'll be conducting a mini Christian Worldview Conference. And now, we all love acronyms, don't we? NANC. Who knows what NANC stands for? National Association of Nethetic Counselors. That's an old term. In the place of NANC, we have ACBC. What does that stand for? Not ACDC, Tim. ACBC. It's an Association for Christian Biblical Counseling. And then ABC, what does that stand for? Antioch Bible Church. And now we have MCWC. What does that stand for? I just said. Mini Christian Worldview Conference. That's what we have this weekend. MCWC. Mini Christian Worldview Conference. Now, our subject for the weekend, the book of Joshua. And we will have a fairly slow introduction, but we will pick up speed as we go. We're going through 24 chapters of Joshua in 4 reduced sessions. I'm going to hammer that one, man. So our topic, there you have it. Our heading for the weekend, God's sovereignty, holiness, faithfulness, and mercy. That is our topic or our heading for Joshua. Now let us remind ourselves of some of God's early promises. His early promises. During the time of creation, there were some promises that God gave. He said to Adam and Eve, if you eat the fruit, you will surely die. Well, people did start dying, and it looked like there was to be no hope. Another promise. You shall bruise him on the heel. He shall bruise you on the head. So there was hope. That's the well-known Genesis 3:15. That was some of God's promises during the time of creation. During the time of Abraham, here are some of the promises God gave. I will make you a great nation. Genesis 12, Genesis 15. Second promise, I will give this nation a land. Genesis 15. Next promise, I will bless the nations of the earth through you. Genesis 17, 4-6. Three of the promises God made to Abraham during the time of Abraham. So we have promises during creation, promises during the time of Abraham, that was after the flood. Then the time of the early Exodus, Exodus 19-24. This. And particularly Exodus 23:22. If you listen to my angel, God says, if you listen to my angel, he will bring you into the land of your 7 enemies. If you listen to my angel, he will. Time of Leviticus. A couple of months later, at the mountain, Leviticus 26, if you obey me, God said to Israel, I will bless you as follows. You can go and read Leviticus 26. If you disobey me, I will curse you as follows. Promises from God. So we have promises from the time of creation, the time of Abraham, the early Exodus, Leviticus, and then 40 years later, on the plains of Moab, Israel is on the eastern side of the Jordan River, preparing themselves to go in. Moses is giving them a second version or a second time the law. Deutero 2, Nomos, law. Not the second law, a second presentation of the law on the plains of Moab. And God says, Deuteronomy 28, through Moses, the same as in Leviticus 26, similar passages. If you obey me, I will bless you as follow. If you disobey me, I will curse you as follow. And then in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, all the time of the Exodus, we read about Israel's distrust of God and disobedience toward God. Distrust, disobedience. That's Israel. Promises from God. So if you believe God, you believe God, it follows that you will trust Him. Would you agree with that? Right, we have seven people in here agreeing. I'll repeat this. If you believe God, it follows that you will trust Him. Would you agree? Right. 19 people with voice boxes. That's okay. No, we won't practice it. Here's a teacher. He wants us to practice it until everybody answers. If you trust Him, you will obey Him. If you trust Him, you will not doubt Him. Doubt and disobedience. That's Israel. In Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and later on. Just read through the Judges. Isn't it depressing? 13 cycles of downward spiral. So from this, if you trust Him, you will not doubt Him. If you trust Him, you will obey Him. It follows then two common sins, the sin of disobedience and the sin of distrust. The sin of disobedience we can further divide into sins of omission, leaving out, and sins of commission, doing what is wrong. So two common sins, disobedience, omission and commission, and then doubt. Things are looking bleak, so I start panicking, and when I panic, I make bad decisions. God has revealed His way, but I doubt whether it is the best way. I would rather do it my way. There's even a song. I do it my way. Doubt and disobedience. And God knows our tendency for disobedience and doubt, and He then works in us, His children, because He knows our tendency for disobedience and doubt. He works in us, His children, a program to get us to trust. And hey, you know half my sermon. You can finish these sentences. Trust and obey, for there's no other way. What we are going to do when we are in Joshua, we'll read together. But when I refer to other passages, I'll put it up on the screen for you so that you can see it and read it. There's not enough time for us to page to all it. So even Moses, the Moses, has shown doubt. Exodus 3 verse 9. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel. God is speaking to Moses. The cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that, here's the purpose, you always surround so that's in your Bible, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses. Now guys, this is seriously different from what we find, for instance, in Ephesians 2 and Ephesians 4, but God. When it says, but Moses, that's bad when God has spoken. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? It's almost what I said to Tim when he extended the invitation to come here. I said to him, who am I? By the time you get to my name, you've gone through all the good guys. Why do you contact me? Since Timmy's not God, I could ask him that. It's bad for Moses to say to God, who am I? And for the next 26 verses, Moses argues against God's call for him to go and lead the Israelites out. 26 verses of argumentation against God, which ends this way. You would not want this in your life. Exodus 4:14. Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses. Why? Because Moses is arguing, explaining to God why he shouldn't be doing what God is not asking him to do, is instructing him to do. Where God guides, he provides. Not a good place to be. The anger of the Lord burns against Moses. Now guess who prevailed? Guys, when I ask a question, that's where you have the opportunity to answer. So I can make sure that you are still tracking with me. Guess who prevailed? Good! Remember, three answers in a Sunday school. God, Jesus, Bible. So you select between those three, and you were right. God prevailed. But God continued to encourage Moses. Look at Exodus 7 verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, see, I make you as God. To Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all I command you. And your brother Aaron shall speak to Pharaoh, that he, Pharaoh, let the sons of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, that I may multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. When Pharaoh does not listen to you, and he won't, because I'm going to harden his heart, then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring out my hosts, my people, the sons of Israel, from the land of Egypt, by great judgments. So what do we see so far? We see instruction in this way. I make you as God to Pharaoh. Aaron shall be your prophet. Speak all that I command. I will harden Pharaoh's heart. I may multiply my signs and wonders. I will lay my hand on Egypt. I will bring out my people. What we see here is instruction, and then encouragement, and then promise. And notice this one. Fulfillment. When God gives instruction, and He does, and He's given us instruction, everyone in here that is God's child, you have been given instruction. He will encourage you through the Holy Spirit. He will fulfill His promises. He will do what He says. But remember, we are introducing Joshua, not Moses. So notice the transition here. Somewhere in the process, God made clear to Moses that he, Moses, will not lead the liberated Israelites into the promised land. God says to Moses in Deuteronomy 1:37, Moses is talking, he's telling, remember they're on the plains of Moab, on the eastern side of the Jordan, just before they enter the country, 40 years after the initial exodus out of Egypt. Moses is relaying to the people the history. Moses says, the Lord was angry with me also on your account, saying, not even you, Moses, shall enter there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter there. Encourage him, for he will cause Israel to inherit it. That's another promise. Now, why this harsh ruling that God says to Moses, you will not enter there? Why this harsh ruling? Here's the reason. Numbers 20 verse 12. The Lord said to Moses, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And by now, we should be primed for relevant information. God has made promises regarding Israel to Abraham, repeated it to Isaac, repeated it to Jacob, repeated it in the time of Joseph. He's made promises regarding Israel. He has instructed Moses to lead the nation. Moses has sinned against God when he got upset. Moses had an anger problem. Go and read how often Moses got angry. And that was kind of a righteous anger. Unless he sinned, then it's not a righteous anger, because Ephesians 4, you remember that? 26, in your anger do not sin. When you get angry and it's a righteous anger, it's for God's glory, do not sin while you are angry. So Moses sinned against God, and then God has removed him from leadership and has decreed that Joshua will lead Israel. And that is where we start the Joshua journey. And you know those acronyms? I have another one. GJG. Sounds familiar. GJG. It sounds the same. That is General Joshua Genetics. GJG is an acronym for, let me give you some outline of Joshua. And it's a bad alliteration. Pastors do that. Tim's alliteration is probably worse than mine, because I practice it in two languages. He only has English. He's trying with Afrikaans, not too bad. General Joshua, not Joshua the general, general in general. General Joshua Genetics. So let's see some background. Joshua was the leader from around about springtime of the year 1406 BC. At this stage, Joshua was around 90 years of age. Imagine that, Jeff, 90 years of age. And he dies around 20 years later. The Bible tells us he dies at 110 years of age in Joshua 24:29. The history covers about 20 years, roundabout. And guys, there's difference in calculation here. You will find a lot of difference in the calculation if you read different commentaries on this. Is it 20 years? Is it 25 years? So the history covers about 20 years of Joshua, the history, beginning with Israel on the east bank of the Jordan and concluding with the tribes settled in the land and the death of Joshua round about the year 1385 BC. Now here is one of the many sections, structures, for Joshua in different sections, four different sections. First of all, preparation. That is to take the land. In Afrikaans, we say, inname van die land. Then conquest. So it's chapter 1 to 5, the preparation. 5 to 11, conquest. That's the invasion of the land. There's a difference to take the land and to invade the land. That's oorname in Afrikaans, oorname van die land. Then 12 to 21, settlement. The land is divided in between the tribes, that is besitneming in Afrikaans. And then 22 to 24, preservation. That's the stability in the land if Israel stays loyal to Yahweh. Dis die behoud. So in Afrikaans we have inname, oorname, besitneming, behoud. In English, preparation, conquest, settlement, preservation. Which brings us to chapter 1 of Joshua. And we'll see God's promises to every single chapter division that we do. God's promises to, in this case, chapter 1, God's promise to provide and guide through the establishment of Joshua. Now, who was Joshua? He was an assistant. And he was the assistant of Moses. Exodus 33:11. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face. That doesn't mean God appeared to him face to face, because the Bible clearly makes it clear in Exodus as well that you cannot see. God says to Moses, you cannot see God face to face and live. So this means God is in the presence of Moses. Moses has a very close interaction with God. The face to face is not a particular face-to-face meeting in the presence of, in the close presence of. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face-to-face, just as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses returned to the camp, his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, aged, young. Some of us have that age and we don't feel that young. If he started his ministry at 90, this is about 40 years earlier. So he's around about 50 years of age. A young man would not depart from the tent. So he's Moses' assistant, but he was also Israel's general. Exodus 17 verse 8. Then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, choose men for us and go out, fight against Amalek. Then verse 13 of Exodus 17. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So we can see here the assistant, the close assistant, and the general. Joshua had a tight relationship with Moses. Joshua was there when Moses led the people through the sea. He was older than 20. He's one of the two people that survived. Older than 20. He was there when Moses first hit the rock for water to gush out. And again hit the rock when he should have spoken to it for water to gush out. He was there when Moses interceded for the nation when God threatened to destroy the nation. God said to Moses, from you I will bring a new nation. And Moses prayed and interceded for Israel and said, no, Lord, don't destroy them, because then the Egyptians will say, you, the great God, were not able to take them out of the country and bring them into the promised land. Joshua was there when God spoke to Moses on the mountain, when the people were afraid and they said, Moses, you speak to God. As for us, we are afraid. Joshua was there when God spoke to Moses inside of the tabernacle. There was a close relationship between Joshua and Moses. Now, would you agree? Question mark. Vocal response. Right. Would you agree that to take over from someone like Moses would be intimidating? You are right. How does that feel? That's the kind of interaction I have with my wife. She sometimes says to me, you are right. I always say to her, you are right again. Men, listen and learn. This is marriage counseling as well. When you say to your wife, when you use the word right, you also use the word again. You are right again. So yes, it is intimidating for someone to take over from someone like Moses. But God is faithful to keep His promises. God said to Abraham, do not fear, Abraham. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great. That is a promise. God said to Jacob in Genesis 28:15, behold, I'm with you and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Remember now, I initially said to take over from someone like Moses, for Joshua to take over from someone like Moses would be intimidating. So let's just quickly consider God's faithfulness. He gave a promise to Abraham, which he fulfilled and is fulfilling. He gave a promise to Jacob, which he has fulfilled. God said to Moses, Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Remember those words. He will not fail you or forsake you. And later God said to Israel, Isaiah 41:8, but you, Israel, my servant, Jacob whom I have chosen, descendant of Abraham, my friend. Now you know who God is talking to. You whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called from its remotest parts and said to you, you are my servant, I have chosen you and not rejected you. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. God is saying this to Israel. Remember this. It's important in the book of Joshua to remember this. And then God said to Joshua, and this is where we start reading in your Bible, Joshua 1 verse 5. And from now on we'll be reading a lot of Joshua. God said to Joshua, these promises, remember, 1:5, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life, just as I have been with Moses. I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Dinks, kan ek 'n suigding kry asseblief? I will not fail you or forsake you. So, God is faithful to His promises, and this faithful God has prepared Joshua for many, many years. So, when it got to the stage where Joshua had to take over from the intimidating Moses, he has been prepared already for many years. Now, guys, listen to this. Elna, what's her name? Miso. Is that right? Miso. Miso, you work with the Chile Lines now. Do you believe, before you went there, that the Lord has prepared you for what was waiting for you to do there? You testified that sometimes it gets tough and lonely and difficult, but He has prepared you. So far, you've been able to do what you were sent there to do. You will be able to carry on that work. How do we know that? Because God is faithful to His promises. He will do that. So take courage. And the rest of us. For whatever the Lord has prepared you, if He saves you, He has prepared you beforehand to be able to do that. God is faithful. And this faithful God has prepared Joshua for many years. So look at this. We've looked at Joshua 1:5. He has prepared Joshua for war in Exodus 17, verse 13. So Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. He has prepared Joshua as a general for war. He has also prepared Joshua to survive in Numbers 26:65, for the Lord has said to them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. All the people 20 years and older will die in the wilderness. And not a man was left of them except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. So He has prepared Joshua for war, to survive and go into the promised land, to be encouraged. He has prepared him by encouragement in Deuteronomy 3:28. Then Moses called, but charged Joshua, God said to Moses, charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go across at the head of this people, and he will give them as an inheritance the land which you, Moses, will only see. And God has encouraged and prepared Joshua by the establishing from Moses. Deuteronomy 31 verse 7. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him, in the sight of all Israel, Moses, the leader whose responsibility would intimidate you if you knew to take it over, in front of the nation, in the sight of Israel, says, be strong and courageous, Joshua, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. Miso, isn't that right? You asked for prayer. He goes ahead of you. He never changes. He's promised that to Moses. It's true for all of us. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Do not. So far, in these, how many minutes of introduction, 30 minutes already, all we've looked at is God's faithfulness. He promises and he keeps his promises. He does what he says. He's also prepared Joshua by being confirmed by the people in Deuteronomy 34 verse 9. Now Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the sons of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. So now is the time, and read with me Joshua 1 verse 1. Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given. I have given. I'm not going to give it to you. I have said to Abraham, you will have it. I have given to you just as I spoke to Moses. Now, if you know nothing about Moses, if you knew nothing about Moses, if this is the first time that you've heard this story or read any of these passages, you might have responded when God said to Joshua, what Joshua knew, my servant Moses is dead. You might respond, well, I guess it's kind of sad that Moses is dead, but hey, how old was the guy? Maybe it was time for him to prepare a place for somebody else, to just die and go to heaven. But Joshua grasped the responsibility placed on him. And he trembled. He understood. In James 2, there's a verse that says, the demons believe and they shudder. Why do they shudder? Because they know what they know is true. Christ is going to deal with them, and they won't ever be free of the judgment that Christ brings on them. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Otu. I know a new name. Otu. 25 of them actually, but I cannot put the names with the faces. So I couldn't take the book because I wouldn't have been able to point out the people that I got to know. One of them I can, that I recently met, I can put the name and the face together, Tina. So Joshua grasped the responsibility, and what was his reaction? He trembled. Now, can you imagine a more intimidating task than to take over from Moses? No human figure in history casts a longer shadow over the Old Testament than Moses. 852 times his name is mentioned in the Bible. 772 of those Old Testament references. 80 of those New Testament references to Moses. In comparison, the next guy in the Old Testament that might be mentioned a lot, who would you say? Give me some ideas. David. Abraham. Let's look at this one. In comparison, Abraham, the next most imposing figure mentioned in the Bible, is mentioned 230 times. Slightly less, wouldn't you say? 163 in the Old Testament, 67 in the New Testament. Can you imagine a more intimidating task to take over from a person with that Bible history? Also, the nation was formed under Moses' leadership, and despite their endless grumbling, Israel was paralyzed without him. Moses prayed and they were fed. Moses interceded and they received water. Moses spoke to God and they were not consumed by God's wrath. Joshua is stepping into some quite continue, fill up the sentence for me. Joshua is stepping into some quite significant, sandals. Sandals. Okay, remember this. Deuteronomy 34:10. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. Those are the sandals Joshua needs to fill. Now, since he's not Moses, he needs and needed divine affirmation so that the people will follow him and obey him. And in verse 16 of Joshua 1, let's read together. Joshua 1:16. That is the nation talking to Joshua. They answered Joshua, saying, "All that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous." Tim, imagine someone says to you, anybody that comes into Antioch and does not obey your words and listen to what you command him shall be put to death. Do you think you'll be able to lead a nice church? Imagine that. You have the opportunity to hear these words from the people you'll be leading. If they don't listen, they die. All these affirmations were necessary because before Joshua and the nation that he was leading, there was a country filled with Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. According to Deuteronomy 7 verse 1, seven nations greater and stronger than Israel. God said to them, seven nations greater and stronger than you, those you will face. Let me give you a modern day example. You are asked to take over the pulpit of the following pastor. You're a pastor and you are asked to fill this guy's pulpit. To date, you have published more than 150 individual books. These are all factual, okay? These books have been translated into 24 languages. The pastor has been pastor for one single congregation for more than 50 years. That congregation has a weekly attendance of around 8,000 people, weekly attendance. The pastor is a former president of a seminary, he's a former chancellor of a university. He has published a full set of commentaries. He's the general editor of a study Bible that has been translated into Portuguese, French, Spanish, Russian, Arabic, Chinese, German, and Italian. And his sermons are broadcasted about 1,000 times daily throughout the world. You are asked, when he dies or retires, to step into the pulpit. How will that make you feel? Would you say slightly intimidated? To take over from Moses was exponentially more intimidating. Do you understand why the Lord says to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous"? You'll be okay, Joshua. I'm walking ahead of you. But realize this, understand this, hear this. God is not impressed by human ability. God is not hampered by human deficiencies. And God is not troubled by human defects. God's plan will progress and God's promises will play out. Therefore, we need to understand that the book of Joshua, and moving towards the end of our introduction now, the book of Joshua is not about the man Joshua. What is the meaning of the word Joshua? God who saves. The book is about God who saves. The title of the book, Yahweh Saves. Ultimately, the book is a display of God's, remember our title, sovereignty, His holiness, His faithfulness, His mercy, as He redeems a people from slavery in Egypt to the promised land that He has promised way before. Another interesting thing, the name Joshua extends to someone in the New Testament. Who would that be? Jesus. Joshua is the transliterated New Testament word for Jesus. So what was Jesus' involvement with Old Testament Israel? This is just for interest. In 1 Corinthians 10 verse 1, we read this. Paul is teaching. He says, "For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, Israel in the wilderness, and all passed through the sea, Israel out of Egypt, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate of the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they," our fathers, "were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ." Christ in the Old Testament. We will later see the engagement of the angel of the Lord with both Moses and Joshua. So God encourages Joshua. Let's read again, verse 5, Joshua 1. "No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous." And then verse 7, "Only be strong and very courageous." Verse 9, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Why this constant encouragement? First of all, big sandals to fill. Secondly, Joshua was with Moses when God said the following to Moses. Joshua was there, a young man. He heard. Deuteronomy 31:16. "Behold, Moses, you are about to lie down with your fathers, and this people," these Israelites, "this multitude on the plains of Moab that is waiting to, within a number of days or hours, enter the land, this people will arise and play the harlot with strange gods in the land into the midst of which they are going, and will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them." Now let's consider again our modern day example of having a big pulpit to fill. That pastor that I was referring to, he dies and you have to step into his pulpit. And God indicates to you as you step into that pulpit that this congregation that you are taking over from this man who has led this congregation for more than 50 years, they are going to apostatize and rebel and disobey under your leadership. That is what we see here. So here is what Joshua had to face. Here is what he had to face. The best leader and prophet is dead. There is a land to conquer. It is filled with seven nations larger and stronger than the Israelites. That nation will fight back. And the nation that has to be your soldiers will be disobedient to God. But God has a plan, and this plan is from eternity past, and it will succeed because God is sovereign and holy and faithful and merciful. The success of God's plan is not dependent on human ability, human character, human obedience, But it is part of God's design to make use of humans. That's what He does with us. Why does God tell us to go out and disciple? Why does He tell us that? He has decided to use humans in His plan on earth. When you're obedient and disobedient, God's plan will be brought to fruition. And this is what we see as God's plan unfold in the story of Joshua. So don't get bogged down with unnecessary questions like, was Rahab right to lie? Did the earth actually grind to a halt when Joshua started pursuing a fleeing army? Don't ask questions like that. That is not the focus. Well, you may ask questions like that, but ask someone that may be able to answer them. Find someone like that. If you ask those questions, that misses the central and core message of the Bible. The purpose of Joshua is this: to build confident faith in a sovereign, holy, faithful, and merciful God that has never changed, will never change, and keeps His promises. These promises were made to Abraham almost 600 years before that time. So let's end with some application. Why do we not have to panic when the tide is high and the storm is raging and the wind is strong against us in our face? Why do we not have to panic? I'll give you some guidance. We serve the same God. Did the disobedience of Israel delay God's plan or destroy God's plan? Answer, no. God's plan is right on track. In the New Testament, we read about Christ, born at the fullness of time, exactly on time as God has planned it in eternity past. So how is it that Israel was in Egypt in the first place? Just a few thoughts. Why were Israel in Egypt where they had to be liberated from? Because it was part of God's plan. Genesis 15 verse 12. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. And behold, terror and great darkness fell upon him. God said to Abraham, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. There they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterwards they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Then, in the fourth generation, they will return here. For the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. The Amorites still have to sin some more, so that I can judge them through this nation that I'm going to liberate from Egypt with possessions that they got there and take into the promised land, so that they will judge. They will be my sword on these Amorites. And what was God going to do with Israel in Egypt when they are there? Genesis 50 verse 19, but Joseph said to his brothers, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God, do you remember but Moses? But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. While you thought, said Joseph to his brothers, that you were getting rid of me, God was working out our nation's future. If you have to face struggles, God is faithful. He is holy. He is just. He remembers His promises and He is merciful. So the book of Joshua reveals to us the sovereign God who rules the nations absolutely, including Russia and Ukraine, the Holy One who judges wickedness as He is judging, The faithful God of Abraham, who brought his descendants to Canaan precisely according to his timing to fulfill the covenant he had made with Abraham 600 years earlier, and a merciful God who extends salvation to those people he went to judge. And we'll see that. And this is where we move into chapter 2 after a prolonged period of song worship in our second session. Let me pray. Father, thank you for these good reminders. You are faithful and you will not break your promises. Let that give us courage as we face life. Amen.